Hey guys, welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast. This week, we're going to do something a little different, and we're going to replay a podcast that I was actually a guest on, the Life and Air Show. And the Life and Air Show is about living your life on purpose. As you know, we talk about how we invest with purpose. And the Life and Air Show does a great job talking to us about a life-changing concept about how you can live your life on purpose, how you can design your life so that you're rich in life experience, not just in money, meaning time with your family, doing the things that you love to do, give to causes that matter to you. As you know, that's a big piece of why Integrity Holdings Group does what it does. So the book was written by Steve Cook. We did the Life and Air podcast with Jason Woho and also Polish Peter. We had a great time talking about just how we are implementing kind of their Life and Air tactics into our business, how we're doing business more like a ministry and how we're giving more abundantly than we ever thought that we would be able to by doing that. So check it out, the Life and Air Show podcast. And if you're not subscribed to them already, talking way more about than just what we want to do in terms of business, right? Talking about how to live your life on purpose and how to be rich in time and the things that you want to do with your family. So take a listen, reach out, let us know what you think. Without further ado, here we go. Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we share how we have done over $200 million in real estate deals to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. If you're ready to start investing with purpose, visit freefromwallstreet.com. But for now, let's dive into this episode.
Thanks for joining us in the Life and Air Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate to get to spend some time with you guys.
Dude, I'll tell you, I've only had the chance to talk with you once prior to this episode. We were introduced by a mutual friend, Keith Blackborg. And man, I just feel like I totally hit it off with you. I loved your story. We talked about some really cool stuff going on with your business. So our audience and our listeners don't know who you are. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so graduated from college, went to Boston University 2004, graduated, kicked around trying to do some sales jobs after that, and ended up getting into real estate, started working for a family business doing some real estate stuff, and became a broker, recognized that, hey, there were some people out there doing real estate that I was finding deals for that were flipping and making more money than me, and I was finding the deals. Why can't I go do that myself, right?
Yeah.
So I've always been an entrepreneur, you know, kind of at heart, and noticed that I could probably stop working with buyers and sellers and go flip houses. So over the next 10 years, we built a pretty big wholesaling and flipping business. We were doing, you know, 150 deals a year at one point. Very active job. Probably became one of the bigger wholesalers in New Jersey, which is where we're based out of. So built that business with my wife, by the way. So she, she was the support system for us, and she's a very process oriented, security driven person. So we got married, and about 2 months later, I said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and we're going to quit our jobs.
That went over well, I'm sure.
She was extremely supportive. A few times, you know, if you've started your own business, you know, the first few times you almost lose everything a few times. And, every time I said, hey, babe, I can go back and get a job. I can go get a sales job and we can make six figures a year. And she said, you know, you will be miserable. And I don't want to live with that, frankly. So she really encouraged me to continue building our business because I was happier that way. I was happier working for myself, even if we weren't successful. So we did build a successful business over time. It took us about 5 years to figure out what we were doing wrong and to find mentors that could really help us to figure out what to do right. You know, so that was the first lesson in kind of growing this was find mentors, find people that can help guide you to where you want to go. If they've already been there, no need to reinvent the wheel, right? Mm-hmm. And then over the last couple of years, we've switched from the residential fix and flip market to wholesales to large scale commercial complexes. So now we buy, you know, 150 unit apartment complexes. We've built three self-storage facilities that are managed by CubeSmart, over 300,000 square feet of rentable square footage. So you know, about 2000 units in storage, another 600 units in multifamily. And we've only been in this space for about 2.5 years. So it's going well. We're continuing to grow and shape that business as well. And the reason that we made that switch, by the way, is just taxes in the fix and flip world and the wholesale world. It's a transactional business. Everything is taxed at your ordinary income rate. So we were getting crushed. We were doing a lot of volume, but it was a very active business, very transactional business. And we got taxed like crazy. In the commercial real estate market, there's a lot more tax benefits. So you can work less essentially and make more and keep more of it and not have to partner with Uncle Sam. So that's been the kind of evolution of our business. Personally, I'm married, my beautiful wife, Grace. We have 3 kids, 7, 3, and 1 year old. So a pretty good span. I was just telling you before we jumped on the podcast, we just got back from a 2-week vacation down in Hilton Head, which was beautiful. We got to get out of the New Jersey cold and go down to some warm weather. And I met Jesus about, 12 and a half years ago now. Did not grow up in a very religious household. We were CEOs. We went to church on Christmas and Easter only. And
dude, I've never heard that. That's hilarious.
CEOs. Yeah.
CEOs. Christmas, Easter only. So,
my Polish brain had to like rewind a little bit. And it's like, yeah, okay.
If you see smoke coming from like that side of the screen, that's Peter's brain.
That's what's happening. He's thinking through. Yes. So, yeah. So if you go to church, you know who I'm talking about, right? The people that come on, on Christian. So that was me growing up. And my wife is the youngest of 7, and both of her parents were pastors, and I ended up going to church just to, you know, kind of date my wife and out of respect for her and her family. And the Lord met me there and clobbered me over the head and recognized that I could do a lot better with my life by following Jesus. And man, it was an amazing transformation over the last, you know, more than decade. So,
man, that's amazing. And so that actually plays a lot into what you do in your business now, right? And how you've structured your business model. We talked a little bit about that. Share with people, like, you know, the conversation we had as to how you even run your business now in that regard.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different in the fact that I was kind of trying to figure out, I think all of us love the idea of giving abundantly. What we don't love is figuring out how to execute on that, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the easiest thing to do. It's easy to tithe, I think. You know, as you get into being a tither, you can give 10% of your income away to the church. But, you know, I felt a bigger call. I really felt like our business was built so that we could fund many ministries. And this really started while we were still in the residential side of the business. We were trying to, I was sitting at the kitchen table. Somebody came over that was a missionary in the Philippines. They were home for Christmas and they sat at my kitchen table and they came out with the little flip book, right? Telling me about the people that they're helping in the Philippines. And, you know, they're trying to get us to help fund their mission, which is, you know, $50 or $100 or whatever we could afford on a monthly basis to help them get to where they could fund their next trip. And it really hit me that these folks were on the front lines of doing amazing work. This particular girl was taking young girls out of brothels in the Philippines of the red light district and housing them in, you know, it's a hostel for lack of a better term, and helping them get some job skills and just get away from that life. And a lot of these girls are forced into that life or have no other options. And they're teaching them about other options. And, you know, it's amazing work that they're doing, really helping save these girls from a terrible life that they don't want to be in. And then she's home for Christmas to visit with her family. And she's pitching me on why I should help fund. And she's out fundraising, not spending time recuperating, rejuvenating, spending time with her family so that she can go back out. And I mean, who knows that that's hard work, right? That's difficult stuff to see and deal with on a day-to-day basis. So they should be home recharging, not fundraising. And it just rubbed me the wrong way, right? I think that that's when I started to think about and pray about, like how can we fund these ministries when people are home, it's supposed to be relaxing. So I asked her, you know, how much is it going to cost for the next year for you to go back? And the number was nominal. It was like 15 grand. So it just planted a good seed. And now what we do in every single deal that we do, we carve out a nonprofit almost as equity ownership in one of these big deals that we do to create so we raise capital from our investors, right? And they invest to make passive income with us. So we're the active you know, we're out there finding the deals, executing on the deals and managing the deals. Our passive investors invest with us because they want to make passive income. So we basically put the nonprofits into the deal the same way, where they can make passive income over the life of that deal, which is typical 5 to 7 year holds, right? So we were just trying to figure out this way to how to fund these ministries on an ongoing basis. And over the last 2 years, we've partnered with 5 nonprofits, 5 different organizations, and the total over the next 5 years just to those organizations should be an aggregate of over $1 million, which I never thought we would be able to give away. But by partnering with them and giving them a slice of the passive income that's coming off of these deals, we take a little bit less, right? We're not feeling it necessarily, but we're giving way more abundantly than we ever thought we were able to. And it helps them with fundraising. It helps them with planning. It helps them with where are we going in the next 5 years, expansion, you know, what kind of income can we count on? And, you know, by our pro formas, we can kind of typically tell them this is what it's going to look like. It'll be light typically in year 1 and 2 and 3. But as it grows, as we get better operations, those numbers will go up pretty significantly.
Man, when you first told me about that model, my mind is blown because I had never thought of anything like that. I'm like, but what an incredible way to support, you know, God's work and these people that are, like you're saying, like, you know, their best, their highest and best use is out there in the field doing the things that they were called to do, not trying to figure out a way to fund that. So tell us a little bit more, you know, this, and I have no doubt that when our listeners hear this idea, they're going to start wondering like, wow, like how does this actually work? How can I apply this to my business? And it, quite frankly, like, you know, is this something, it sounds like you had an experience when this person came to you to get funded, but also you gave some real thought and reflection and prayer time devoted to this, came to you. How do you actually, how do you do this? Is this, so I'm assuming like your business or each deal maybe has its own LLC, and are you actually putting that charity or that organization onto that ownership in the LLC and then splitting? How does that work?
So it depends, right? So we support 501c3s, which are nonprofits traditionally. Okay. And then you also have, man, I'm going to mess it up, but I think it's like a 501c4 or B4.
One of those numbers and one of those letters.
Yeah, it's one of those. So it's a nonprofit, but you're allowed to utilize it in a different way. It's not a full write-off.
Okay.
And the reason that matters is because for a traditional 501c3, I can't put them as an equity owner on the deal, which is initially what I thought I wanted to do, right? I was like, oh, that's easy. And then distributions will go to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What I found by talking to our accountants is that what we're doing is inadvertently creating unintended business income tax for them, right?
Called
UBIT. So if we were to fund a nonprofit through a real estate transaction and it went directly to them as an owner, then it would trigger UBIT, this unintended business income tax, and then it would create a taxable event for them.
No good.
So it's a little bit more work for us because now it's a pass-through entity. We have to take in that income. You know, we share the organization docs up front, but we have to do the internal accounting to where it comes in through our business and then we pass it through to them, because then it looks like a donation from us, which is a write-off for us, so it doesn't count as income for us. And then for them, it doesn't trigger UBIT, so they get to use the entire amount.
Wow.
So that's functionally how you have to structure it. But the 501, whatever the 4 is, if they are allowed to take in business income from other things without it creating a taxable event, then we'll put them right into the operating LLC. And yes, every deal has multiple LLCs. You have a property level LLC, and then you have a managing membership LLC. Just, it's really about protection for our limited partner investors so that there's multiple layers for them to be protected.
Got it, man. So now, is this something that does that percentage come out of, well, I don't want to say your pocket, but like more out of you as the managing partner's side, or are your investors also participating in this? Because I could also see people like, hey man, no, I'm okay with taking a little bit less of a return too, because I really believe in this process and I love being part of this. How do you, is that something you find?
And we love that people have that mentality. We still don't hit their bottom line with it though. Okay. It does come out of the deal level, which is really us and our partners, you know, the general partnership.
Yeah.
You know, so our investors still make the same returns as they would in a traditional real estate syndication. We say by investing with us, by virtue of investing with us, they get to partner with us on these amazing things, right? And we have five or six different nonprofits so far that we funded that do a variety of things, saving girls from sex trafficking. We're building a an all handicapped accessible park in Toms River that is just wheelchair accessible. So many different amazing causes. You know, we're helping the explosion victims out of Beirut and Lebanon get, you know, water and food and getting, you know, taken out of that country where they need shelter, building hospitals in Western Africa. I mean, it's, there's no shortage of need in the world, right? So the idea of being able to fund them through these deals literally was just a prayer point for us. I was like, Lord, how do I give more abundantly now before I get quote unquote there, right? And you can figure out what your quote unquote there looks like for everybody individually. But I wasn't there yet to where I could give as abundantly as I wanted to. And man, I would love to say that every prayer got answered this quickly. It was literally within, you know, that's 5 minute session of sitting down and really putting some thought to it that the Lord was like, just partner with me on every deal. And I said, wow, that's very simple and very achievable. And that's kind of how I always know that that's God speaking to me, right? He's not complicated. It's like, this is pretty simple. Might not be easy to do, right? When you look at the millions of dollars that you're going to give away, but that's the purpose, I think, of the business. So I was really excited when that came to us.
So I got a question, because this is really good stuff, man. One question that pops up in my head is, because you didn't used to do it this way in the previous businesses, right? That you ran.
Yeah, we just tithed.
Right. And now you are doing it this way. Has that changed how you approach business, how you run business, how you, you know, steward it or whatever? Has that changed that?
Well, the talking points have certainly changed. When we started the business, we started raising money, right? Telling people about what we were doing, letting them know that they can invest in these large scale apartment complexes. And there's a lot of metrics as to why people would want to do that. But since we started doing business this way, it has really changed the conversation. It's changed what we're talking about, because yes, we're trying to, you know, build a very successful, financial, stable business, but mm-hmm. we're also helping a lot of people do a lot of great things, right? So, I mean, I've had a lot of people that have reached out to us and said, hey, we want to invest with you guys because of what you're doing. You know, we know real estate, it's going to be fine, right? We're comfortable with that aspect of it, but we want to choose you because of the impact investing piece. And I find that a lot more of our investors are looking for significance versus success. They've gotten mm-hmm. to a place in their life where that matters more. You know, I was just listening to you and Steve Cook talk about, you know, the different levels, right, of where you need to go and why that mindset shift is a big deal between significance and success. And a lot of our investors, they've made that switch regardless of their financial ability, by the way, right? I have people that have that mindset of significance versus success, and they can only put $25,000 into a deal, not a million. And it's interesting, the community of people, the tribe that we're building by doing business this way, and the conversations are different. And even our social media pages, you know, it's cool to see our podcasts go out, but our podcasts are me talking about some deals and we're interviewing the guys that run the nonprofits, because we want to share their story, because we're impacting them and we want to know more about how we can help them. And right. It has really changed the conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to the Free from Wall Street podcast. We're excited that you're listening and tuning in every week, but we want to have a two-way conversation with you, not just a one-way conversation. So go to integrityhg.com/webinar and join us on one of our weekly webinars where you can meet me, meet the team, have a conversation, and let's really talk about your investing goals and how we can help.
How has it happened for you though? Like, is it different how you approach daily business and how you work this thing? Because now there is, you know, the partner, the nonprofit, and you tie it in, it's more direct, right? And obviously there is, from what you're telling me, the nonprofits that you're a part of, you know what's going on in those nonprofits, right? Whether it's the Philippines, and in the back of your head, you probably know that that's what's happening back then with that money, right?
Well, it goes back to your why.
Does that change how you approach that? Yeah, exactly.
So when people figure out their why and why they're doing business, and I think a lot of people say their family, and a lot of people have these different whys. On our last podcast, actually, we talked about the seven layers of why. It's like, oh, I want to invest so I can create passive income. Mm-hmm. Why? Right.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when you're partnered with the King of Kings so that you can impact the kingdom for eternity, it definitely changes how you look at doing a deal, because you're not just looking at this for, I mean, and not to take anything away from our amazing investors that we love so much that have made our business a success. We always fought tooth and nail to make sure that their returns were solid and stable and secure. But yeah, the extra layer of the human aspect of what we're able to do with the finances above and beyond their returns makes a difference in how we not approach the deal, right? But approach the thought process for sure. It's in the back of your mind going, wow, you know, if we bring our expense ratio down another 3.5% over the next 5 years, that'll create another $200,000, which will save, you know, this many people from sex trafficking and can feed this many people or can dig this many more wells. I mean, it's, and what's amazing is our whole team thinks that way, right? Mm. So our whole team, and we're not a big team, but I mean, our whole team looks at things with that kind of eternal lens of like, what kind of impact are we having by creating the right relationships with the right investors, partnering with the right nonprofits, and creating passive cash flow for them so that they can go and do the work that so resonates with our hearts.
Man, well, Peter, as you asked that question, I was thinking of like, you know, Stephen is like, knowing that God's involved in your business, does that add a layer of comfort, peace, and security? Or you're like, listen, whatever's going to happen, I know that, this is going to go the way God wants it to go. And I can see that as being one side. And then the other side of me is wondering like, wow, like, you know, I have to, this has to go well, because these people, like, if this deal doesn't produce what I think it's going to do, I'm letting these people down. And I'm like, did you ever wrestle with that? Or did you go more towards the former, where you just kind of had a piece in it?
Yeah. So I'm the eternal optimist, right? I'm sure other people can look at this and say, wow, if you don't perform right, you're going to be letting these folks down. But I looked at it as, we're partnering with God on every deal. How can we fail?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it gives you another level of peace and comfort that you're doing the right deals. When you miss out on deals, there's probably a hidden reason, right, that you didn't get that deal. Maybe there was something that was going to blow up later on and you didn't know about it. Or yeah, I always look at that hedge of protection that comes along with being able to pray over every deal, be able to pray over whether we're supposed to be sending these contracts over, things like that. So yeah, there's certainly a sense of security that comes along with it, but there is that parable of the talents stewardship requirement that comes along with it. We know that God will continue to bless us when we do the right thing with his money. And that holds us to a whole nother level of accountability.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, in as you're talking, it's reminding me a lot of the, like, how we look at life in air, because, you know, I have a document. Well, I can't see it right now. My monitor is right in front of my screen. We have a document. It's called it's a covenant that Steve Cook and I signed that says, hey, this is God's business. He's the owner. We're the managers. We're the stewards. Mm. We're going to include him on every big business decision. We're going to act as if he's in the boardroom with us when we're making choices and we're choosing directions, and we're going to do everything in accordance with what we believe he wants the company to do and move forward with. And so it sounds very, very similar to what you're doing. Like, this is really, in a way, your business is its own ministry. And it is.
You know, and I believe that marketplace ministry is a thing, and I don't know if it's talked about nearly enough. I mean, I'm not called to go to a mission field in Africa. I'm not, right? But I have been blessed and gifted with the ability to make a bunch of money, right? So money is needed, right? I mean, I think, I forget the missionary, what his name was, but basically it said, you know, I will go down into the pit if you hold the ropes, right? And the money is the rope holder. I mean, you need the capital to go out and do these things, and these guys need funding. And that's an important piece of missionary work. And I think that our business as a ministry is an important thing to look at. And I think Christian business owners in general need to recognize that they've been gifted with the ability to make money so that they can still build the kingdom. So that's the call, right? And it becomes very easy, right, to your point, Peter, about, you know, the why and the what's going on in the back of your mind. And, you know, this is my ministry, right? My wife is a worship leader at church. That's her ministry. Every time I get on the phone with an investor to try to get them to invest in our business, where every time we take down a 120 unit complex, I know what that ministry is going to look like. It's going to produce for these nonprofits. And don't forget about the hundreds of families that we get to affect in the apartments that they live in the complexes that we own, right? I mean, so you, not only are you affecting these nonprofits, right, but you're affecting the lives of hundreds of families that live in your apartment complexes to give them a safe, secure, clean, well-lit place to live and raise their families too, and be able to share the gospel with those folks as well through showing them some love and being a good landlord. So, I mean, this business in particular has given us an entire new breath of life in terms of where you get to do ministry.
Well, and actually what you said really was what I was thinking is like, this is not only like, I'm looking at this from a 10,000 foot level view. Here you got the ministries directly that you're influencing. You are, yourself and your team are in this ministry as people to share, but not just with those ministries that you're supporting, but also, like you said, you have a chance now for your residents to learn about what you're doing, to inspire them, your investors. You know, I could even see, like, you know, you may, and I don't know for sure, maybe all your investors are already on their spiritual walk. This is allowing them to go further on that walk, or you might even attract people that have no interest and are only attracted to the money, but now that's the approach, and now you have a chance to kind of like sow those seeds into them that
I had a great
bring them along.
Yeah, and sorry to interrupt, I just get so excited about this story because we went out to lunch, my COO Sean and I, who happens to be my brother-in-law. We took this investor out to lunch, and he worked with him at a former job, and we told him about this principle in our business that we support these nonprofits. And he looked at us and he went, "Why do you do that?" And he was like, "Well, is there tax benefit to it? What is the, you know, what, why would you do that?" And, you know, he called it, "Oh, maybe it's just good karma." And we tried, you know, and we started to explain to him why we do what we do. And you saw kind of the light bulb go off that he had lived his 60 years of life without considering the opportunity to impact the world in a different way with the money that is being invested. And it was great because by the end of it, he was like, "Well, tell me more about this, you know, who you're supporting and that stuff." And yeah, it's great to have this conversation. So no, not everybody that invests with us is a Christian or spiritual or whatever, right? They like real estate and that's why they've jumped in, but they are constantly seeing the why. And I think it starts to change how they've even looked at investing. I mean, because they're not just riding the roller coaster of the stock market. They're not just getting their monthly checks from us. They're also getting weekly and monthly updates from, "Hey, just by investing with us, you've also helped do this, right? We've also sent 300 bags of food to people in Lebanon. We've also done this. And because of you, we were able to do this, right?" And you can't escape the blessing. That's what I love about when people invest with us is you get the blessing regardless. Right? Like you don't get to shy away from the blessing. It's yours. And by virtue of investing with us, you get it. And that's what God is doing, I think, is sowing those different seeds all over the place, which I think is really cool.
Man, that is awesome. I love that. You're literally giving a new definition to the word investing. Like really, if you think about it, that's what you're doing. Yeah. How are you choosing which ministries to support? Like what does that process look like?
Yeah. And this is part of the concern that we had before we started was we're going to get inundated, right? And we don't take an application. We don't have a process for that yet. So far, it's been just personal relationships. You know, it's been people coming to us and saying, "Hey, I'd like you to meet with the owner of such and such nonprofit. I think you guys are aligned in terms of your vision, and I think that you can really help them." And that's been kind of it. I mean, we found one of the guys used to go to our church. He was a special forces guy. Now he runs a nonprofit called the Blessings Project. He's built some pastoral training centers in Niger and multiple countries in Africa. He was actually the head of African Command for a time before he retired. We've built medical facilities. He's done pastoral training grounds. He's done the Lebanon and Beirut stuff, saving girls from sex trafficking with like special forces guys, throwing people in the trunk. And it's really incredible. And that's just somebody that we knew through our church. And then somebody said, "Hey, you know, I think you should meet so-and-so, right? Justin Reeder out of Charlotte, North Carolina. We met him through a friend of a friend. He runs Love Life Ministries, and they literally have a sidewalk ministry where they're just loving on moms walking into abortion clinics and giving them the opportunity to do a free ultrasound and see the heartbeats of their babies before they go inside and decide to abort. Wow. They've saved over 6,000 babies on the sidewalk so far. They're connecting them with local churches and giving them resources, whether it's adoption or help or whatever. One of my favorite stories that he shared was one of the girls stopped and she chose life for the baby. And then what they didn't know was inside the aunt was running the abortion clinic. And now the aunt runs the abortion clinic during the week and then volunteers with them on their sidewalk ministry on the weekend because they don't have other options. So it wasn't about pro-life versus pro-choice. It's what can we do to love on people and give them other opportunities? So that was another great connection. And there's no shortage of need out there, like I've said before, but there's the opportunity. So we prayerfully go in and we just know that God is going to send the right people and the right ministries for us to fund. And it keeps us hustling, right? Because we know that there will be more ministries than deals, but we'll keep figuring out how to fund them.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because this is such an incredible thing. I could see this thing, it already has, but it's going to continue to snowball and take off. And actually, you know what, and maybe what you're seeing here and with these ministries that will be approaching you guys, through the work that you're doing, you may inspire other investors to do the same thing. And all of a sudden now you're like, hey, you know, we don't have this ability, but we know this guy over here. He's a great person. And he's doing these deals. Like, you talk to them.
Yeah. And I'm actually in a real estate investor mastermind of all believers. It's called Kingdom REI. And some pretty big real estate guys in that world too. And I've had a lot of calls talking about how we structure it internally, because it's really started to tug on their heartstrings as well to start putting nonprofits in every deal. So yeah, God's doing some cool stuff. You know, I don't know if we're the first ones to do it. We haven't found anybody else that was doing it, but I do know some people that are on the move to include it into their business model. And that's the butterfly effect that can really have some real eternal consequence.
Man, this is incredible, Stephen. One final large question is, someone who is considering doing this with their own business, like, what is your advice? What are some of the bumps and bruises you got along that journey? What are some of the things they can learn from you as they start exploring this and figuring out how they can do this in their business?
I mean, it's like so before I was saved, I didn't tithe. And then even when I first got saved, I didn't tithe. I didn't think giving 10% to the church was going to help me with my bills. So we started growing in the grace of giving, right? We started giving a couple of dollars and then a couple of percentage points. And then we worked up to the 10%. And then we started giving more abundantly and things like that. And seeing that change in our heart and how that impacted our finances was kind of the proof in the pudding, right? If you plan on doing something like this, one is, don't let it be your tithe, right? So if you're a Christian, if you're not, and you just are looking to give through your business, then go give. But if you're a Christian, you have some biblical principles you have to adhere to first, right? Which is, one, the tithe goes to the storehouse. So that what we're doing is not the tithe, right? That's over and above the tithe. That's the offering. So make sure you're still tithing, because that means you're still being obedient and that means you can still get blessings. So we don't want to cut off the blessing. So still tithe. Two, if you're going to build in some nonprofits into the offering bucket through the business, figure out exactly what that's going to look like. You're going to need some financial planning. Like I said before, we have to take that money in and then we have to put it back out. So there is some bookkeeping that needs to go on in there. We're considering some other avenues about creating our own nonprofit trust so that money can flow into there. And then we'll have somebody else that just manages the funding of the nonprofits. As we get bigger, it's likely going to go that way. So make sure that you don't hurt yourself in terms of accounting and taxes. And then also make sure you're not hurting the nonprofits. So find out if there's unintended business income tax and how you can avoid that with those nonprofits. And then set that up to where the distributions can be monthly, quarterly, yearly, however you want to do it. But then also be realistic, right? And when you're talking to the nonprofits, let them know, hey, these are projections, right? We don't have a crystal ball. The heart is that we want to give as much as we can. Here's what we're projecting. It could change. You don't want people going out and setting their budgets to money that may or may not be there, because you're not committing a dollar amount. unless you are, right? But if it's a percentage of income, then make sure you explain that flexibility to them, because again, setting a budget and then that money not being there for a nonprofit is devastating.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. I was going to say that's really the biggest hurdles that we've had, is making sure that we're managing the distributions correctly and then making sure that we're not setting unrealistic expectations.
Is there a margin of safety that you'd recommend people to start with? Like, so say for instance, like if they're looking at their numbers, you start off with 1%, 2%, like lower is better, or what? How do you navigate that kind of growth?
I mean, I think that's a prayer point. You know, okay. I think somebody's got to figure out what that looks like in their own business. I'm a rip the wheels off kind of guy. So I, you know, we will go bigger and then figure out how to backfill it later, versus my business partner, who's more like, let's do 1% this year, 2% next year. So there's a balance, right? It's a delicate balance. You have your own business expenses. If the business goes out of business, you're not going to be living, you're not going to be providing income for nonprofits forever. So, you know, you have to make sure that you're profitable before you continue to do that. You have to fill your own cup up before you can overflow. And then as you continue to overflow, you know, your cup gets filled up faster.
I have one question, final question from me. That business and how you're running it and what you're doing and everything, has that had any kind of impact on your own personal family, your kids or anything like that?
Well, it's part of the mission, right? So we talk about a family mission, a business mission. I think a lot of people get sucked into creating a business mission and vision, and maybe don't integrate that into the family mission and vision, right? Into the, how we're going to child rear, how we're going to have a marriage, what are we doing? You know, my family's a part of those decisions because it impacts the family, right? It impacts what we're doing. So my daughters know that we have a business so that we can fund the kingdom. So it affects the conversation, right? Because we're not having the conversation with our kids that we're working for money. Money is a byproduct, right? And we like things, right? There's nothing wrong with having, you know, new cars and new houses and things like that, but that's not the mission, right? That might be the byproduct, but it's not the mission. And having the different conversations with your family and making sure that, like, oh, hey, you're doing this. You know, I envision when my kids see me close on, you know, the next apartment complex, when they can come up and say, who are we funding, right? What are we doing with this money? Because that becomes the tenor of the conversation, not the, oh, look, we're going to make more passive income. It's like, oh, you closed another one? Cool. Who are we funding? Who's getting helped? You know, and I would love for that to be the constant conversation.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing, man. Stephen, how do people find out more about what you're doing and find you?
Yeah, so you can go to integrityhg.com. The name of the company is Integrity Holdings Group. We're all over social. Our tagline is invest with purpose. You know, we want to be purposeful about the money that we're investing. We want to invest into people. We want to invest into places. We want to invest into the kingdom. We want to grow all of those things alongside. So you can reach out. There's contact pages on our website, things like that. We have a podcast too called Free from Wall Street. We're all about non-volatility, getting away from the volatility of the stock market and more stable type of investments, alternative investments. And that's what we're talking about. But I love coming on your show, guys, where I don't get to talk about the business that much. We get to talk about the stuff that really matters, that, you know, we try to make sure we integrate into a lot of the conversations, but it really is the foundational piece, you know, and that's what I love about Life and Air. When I read the book a couple years back, it really started to resonate and say, what are we doing? What are we being purposeful about? Why are we building the business this way? What are we going to do that's going to leave a legacy? And this business will certainly do that if we continue to build it this way. And I appreciate the stories that you guys tell on here and the people you invite on to talk about this. This is the most important piece of life. You can't build this business without, you know, the life piece of it and doing life together. And I just love, you know, the messaging and what you guys are bringing to the table. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Free from Wall Street podcast. If you like what you hear, leave us a rating and review and let us know what you think.